Hello, and welcome once again to a MANCAD, British Academy of Audiology podcast. You might well know by now that MANCAD stands for Manchester Centre for Audiology and Deafness, and that we're located at the University of Manchester in the UK. I'm Gabby Saunders. I'm a Senior Research Fellow at MANCAD, and I moderate these podcasts. And we always try to address topics that are pertinent to practice of audiology, but also we want to make sure that they're relevant to researchers and also anybody really who's interested in hearing and hearing loss. And some have related specifically to COVID-related issues, and others are more general considerations in audiology. We have a new podcast each month. Each one lasts about 20 minutes. And we put the audio recording along with the transcript on the MANCAD webpages. And if you take a look at the transcript, you'll see the URL for MANCAD, and it'll take you directly to these podcasts. Anyway, on to today. Our speaker is Antje Heinrich. She's a senior lecturer in audiology and hearing sciences at MANCAD. And she's going to be answering some questions that I ask her on the topic of outcomes measurement, choosing the right tool for the question. But before I begin, I'm going to hand you over to Antje, who's just going to tell us a little bit about herself. Antje.
Yes, thank you, Gabby. To introduce myself, I would say that I consider myself a speech scientist who is interested in all aspects of speech perception across the lifespan. Most of my work is based around behavior testing, so where we basically present stimuli to a listener and then record their reaction. However, more recently, I've become very interested in self-report measures, initially as they relate to speech perception, but now also much more widely, and I'm particularly also interested in looking at their validation. My background is in psychology, and so I did my first degree at the Technical University in Dresden in Germany, and then my master's and doctoral degrees at the University of Toronto in Canada. I came to the UK in 2005 and have been pretty much on a pure research work for much of the time that I've been in the UK, at first in Cambridge and then in Nottingham. But at the beginning of 2018, I started at MANCAD, and through the supervision of rather a lot of students who come from particularly from a lot of clinical backgrounds, I've been much more aware and had much more exposure to clinical questions and the challenges that come with them.
Interesting. Thank you. So what made you choose outcomes measurement as a discussion for this podcast?
So it has become quite clear to me over the last few years that outcome measures are an incredibly important aspect of clinical intervention, any clinical intervention process. And as many of you probably know, particularly the clinicians among you, is that there's a bewildering range of outcome measures that one could choose from. And it's not always clear which one should choose and which one is the best one. And in this podcast, I'm hoping to discuss some of the questions that I think we should be thinking about and we should be asking ourselves before we settle on a particular outcome measure.
Good. So we'll start at the beginning then. Yeah. So what's the ultimate purpose of an outcome measure, and why is it important that we should be measuring it?
Yeah. So ultimately, as a clinician, you want to know whether your intervention was successful for a patient. And maybe, related to that, you not only want to know whether the intervention was successful, but also whether the patient, in this case, the listener, also is a successful listener now, like is doing something better now than they did before the intervention. And for this particular listener, and also you want to be able to distinguish a successful listener, whatever that is, and we will be talking about what that is, from an unsuccessful listener.
That makes a lot of sense. And it sounds fairly simple. I'm sure it's not. So You talk about success. How would you define success?
Yes. And then it turns out it's actually not a simple question at all. There are lots of different dimensions, ways in which you could be talking about success. So basically the question is, what do you want your patient to get better at in terms of listening? Do you want them to have improved performance or better listening and aided performance? for instance, compared to unaided performance, so that would be some sort of benefit in speech perception. Do you want to have a satisfied patient? What does satisfied actually mean? Satisfied as satisfied with their hearing aids, satisfied as in with their communicational needs, satisfied as in better, you know, quality of life satisfaction. So there are lots of different aspects you could be thinking about here. You could be asking yourself, would it be, you know, would your intervention be a success if your patient used the hearing aid, for instance? Or whether they report some sort of reduction in handicap. So there are lots of different ways in which you could answer that question.
And is that one that's more important than another?
Another very good question, also very difficult to answer. Two things that I would say. One is all of these different dimensions that I've talked about are actually not very closely related to each other. So it's not like you can just choose one measurement and it will automatically assess all the other dimensions as well. So you actually do need to choose what you want. And the second thing I would say is, at the end of the day, you need to decide what you want to measure and what defines success for you.
Okay. So in other words, they're just various different dimensions, literally they're different dimensions of outcome.
Yeah. Yes, that's
right. So then presumably you couldn't measure all of them for everybody, because that's an awful lot of measures. So what should we be measuring? Is there like a baseline of a minimum set that we should measure, or what should we do?
Honestly, like, there is not a very agreed minimum set of outcome measures. I do have colleagues who I know work on such a, you know, minimum set. The problem also is that it's not always entirely clear who's asking the question and for whom, you know, like whose viewpoint we are taking. Does successful mean successful for the clinician? So if we are talking from a clinician point of view, then there are a few minimal outcome measures that, for instance, look at things like if you've had intervention surgery, like for instance, to get a cochlear implant fitted, was that successful as in technically successful? You can measure that, and that's an important measure, outcome measure for a clinician. However, it's less likely to be important for a patient. So what should the patient, do we have measures that assess the patient point of view? Do we think that's equally as important as the clinician? Should we assess that? So it's really, to an extent, it's a consensus project where we, you know, lots of different people who are involved with that intervention, like clinicians, patients, maybe also relatives of patients, need to come together to design what is success and what is the minimum outcome set that we need to measure to assess whether success has been achieved. And until that exists, I think from a clinician point of view, we just need to define that for ourselves and be very clear in our head what success is for us and how we measure it and be able to justify that. And I think that's the next best thing we can do.
Sorry. Yeah. So can you elaborate more about what you mean by, you know, defining success from a clinician? You said until we know what that is. Where are you going with that thinking?
Clinician essentially means that, and this is essentially how outcome measures have been developed for the past however long they have been developed, and I'm sure they have a very long history, is that clinicians have basically been set in their practice and saying, okay, I'm seeing a lot of different patients, and I know, I have a very good sense of what I think is important as a measure of success in order to make patients succeed in their real lives, or maybe also in order to meet some other targets. And then they came up with questions that they think represent patients' dimensions. So how true that is, how complete that is, and, you know, how good that sort of reflects the patient experience is not very clear. More recently, there have been efforts to sort of to bring in the patient voice much more strongly and at a much earlier sort of level of development of these outcome measures. So I'm aware of at least like two projects that I think are absolutely brilliant, where patients were very much involved from the very first stage of development of these outcome measures, and they were asked for their views. What is important for them? What can they live with? How important are certain aspects? And that has then been carried forward all the way into the formulation of questionnaire questions. And I think ultimately that is the way to go.
So can you get, do you know these new questionnaires well enough to give some examples of where they really diverge from what the clinician-centered questionnaires were like? Like what it matters, things that patients bring up that clinicians hadn't really considered in the past?
The one that I know in most detail is Sarah Hughes' listening effort questionnaire for cochlear implant users, and I haven't seen the finished questionnaire yet, but what I know that she did, which I really like, is like she really did canvas a large number. You know, she did both in terms of running focus groups and having qualitative explorations of a lot of listening situations and listening environments and listening just life situations of adult patients with profound hearing loss, essentially, who were then fitted with a cochlear implant in order to really understand what their frustrations are and what their problems are. And then that was turned in a multi-stage process into questions that again were put back to the patients for them to say, does this question, as it is now in this questionnaire, reflect what you wanted to have basically reflected in this question and what your original concern was? And I think that is so much better than having, you know, three audiologists or, you know, hearing scientists get together in a pub and write down questions at the back of an envelope and say, I think this is what patients should need to consider.
Yeah, I guess this approach is coming more and more relevant. I mean, in all of medicine, people are realizing that you go to the patient, the person who's got the condition, and ask them what they're looking for, and that does make an awful lot of sense.
I agree. I think you know, just to come back from a scientist point of view, that the thing is, I think it requires a very particular set of skills, and the problem is that you know, like skills are so specialized normally that I think it's not that common to find people who know how to develop questionnaires and can also use qualitative research methods well. And I think that's a really, you know, specialized sort of overlap in skills that we really do need. And that makes a project, I mean, the best projects are all interdisciplinary, there's no question about it. But I think that makes questionnaire development really, really interdisciplinary, as you need qualitative skills at the beginning. But then, and I'm sure we're going to come up onto this later, for the validation to make sure that the questionnaire actually measured what it's meant to measure. It's a completely different skill set. And to find the same research group or the same scientists who can do all of it, I think is quite special. And that is one of the reasons, I think, why it's not that common.
So do these sort of patient, I can't think what the term is, these questionnaires that are sort of developed with patient input. Yeah. I'm curious, do they kind of break down into the benefit, satisfaction, use, reduction, and handicap kind of dimensions, or do they go down a whole different?
I have no idea. So that actually touches on a completely different question, and which again sort of comes back to what it is that we should be measuring, essentially. Yes. And there are two different sort of fundamental approaches to that. One is to basically just put a lot of data into it and see, you know, how all of these different outcome measures that have been developed over the last 30 years, and if you give them to the same participant, do they all tend to answer all of the outcome measures in the same way or not? So can you boil it down to like three, and those are the three that you use. When you do that, what comes out is no, actually, they all contribute unique things to it. And, you know, you either bombard a patient with different outcome measures and get a very comprehensive overview, or you basically focus on the ones that you want. That's one option. The other option is to sort of take more of a conceptual view. And I think that's what you are asking, is like, okay, we know from frameworks that these are the important aspects of success. So we should have a questionnaire that very systematically measures each aspect of that concept, essentially. And the concept that is the most current one that tends to be used is the ICF that people might have heard of, which basically asks about impairment, activity limitation and participation restriction. I don't think I've seen the finished article of Sarah's questionnaire. So I don't know how explicitly she relates back to these sort of things. But I think that is the level of conceptual framework you should be thinking about when coming up with a outcome measures.
And is there any current wisdom on how you should go about choosing what to measure? What's the current thinking to go back to the ICF? Yeah.
The thing is that many of the currently available questionnaires, it's not entirely clear how closely they relate to the ICF framework. Particularly, I think the impairment is fairly well designed, and there's a lot of consensus on how to measure impairment. How to measure activity limitation and participation restriction is a lot less clear. And that even starts with that there's a lot less consensus in what that means, which sort of activities go into which category, sort of thing. And if that, as long as that is not clear, it's really difficult to categorize questionnaires. Probably what I would do aided benefit, or the aided speech perception benefit, that seems obvious. That seems quite obvious as an important dimension. So, and that can be measured as an objective measure, for instance. So, like as a speech and noise outcome test, speech and noise outcome test, behavior test, for instance. I would probably also add a self-report measure for benefit that is patient reported, just to make sure that you do have two very different aspects of the success that you're measuring. This is by no means exhaustive in any sort of way, but I think it does tap into two different dimensions that if you want to have a good outcome measures, that should probably, they should probably score well on these two dimensions.
So I'm just going to bring up something, because I know I thought about this, is when you get a direct conflict between those, you either get somebody who says, I'm not getting benefit, and you can measure big benefit. Yeah. Or you get the converse. You can't measure a benefit, and the patient says, this is great. It's doing everything I need to do. What do you do in that situation?
Yes, that's exactly right. And I mean, I think that's exactly my point with that the measures don't relate very well. And that if you're measuring once, that doesn't by any means mean you're assessing the other thing as well. And I think you bring up a very good example of when that happens. And I think in that case, you just have to remember that these are two separate dimensions, and not every patient has to score highly on both of them. And you can say, well, on this dimension, they're doing well. On the other one, they don't. Does that, for instance, warrant some additional intervention to bring the other dimension up as well? I don't know. I think that is part of the thought process of trying to decide, A, what sort of outcome measure you want to do, and B, if you get a certain outcome, a certain result on an outcome measure, does that trigger anything? Like, does that have any consequence whatsoever? Or are you just happy to know and to either say, okay, that makes my intervention successful or not? I think those are things that just need to be very clear in your head before you start choosing an outcome measure.
That's interesting. I think that's a very good point, to point out that you don't just measure it, but you probably should be doing something with the information you get. And if you're not doing anything with it, one could say, why bother measuring it?
Yes, that's right.
So that is a good point. But I think it's a difficult one, because do you listen Do you take the assumption the patient knows, and if they're saying they're not feeling any benefit, even if you can measure it, do you say, well, you know, I trust your perception? And likewise, do you burst the bubble if they say, really, this is helping me and you can't measure it? I mean, you could assume it's because the measure you're using for aided benefit isn't working, or it's such a complex.
Exactly. And I think also, you know, and it's entirely possible if you can't measure it, you know, there are many reasons why you may not get a benefit that you do not measure as a benefit. It might be that it just measures the wrong thing. It might be that it's such a noisy and insensitive measure that you're not picking up anything. And, you know, like there are lots of different ways, and it's not entirely clear, you know, why you get the result that you do. And to be entirely honest, I don't think it's necessarily, you know, the job of the clinician to decide that either. I mean, that is, you know, like having, I think as a clinician, you can expect to have, you know, sensitive measures, and, you know, and that is what research is for, to develop you with the tools that you need in order to do your trade as a clinician, essentially. In terms of, yes, self-report, I don't know. Is self-report inherently more important or more sensitive to something than objective measures? I don't know. I would probably always have it in there because I think it's important to have the patient's voice. I don't know whether I would make it my only outcome measure.
Don't know. I think there are going to be lots of strong opinions about that out there. Yes. I think that's a really hard one. Well, okay. So you've just sort of alluded to this. There are lots of different tools out there. And if you do want to make some kind of assessment of quality and sort of stand back and say, well, you know, there are all these different measures and they all claim to measure satisfaction. How should you go about thinking about, I'll pick that one over that one? What are some of the things to consider?
Yes, very good question. And another difficult one to answer. What I would say is there's a concept called validation, where you're basically trying to answer questions around, you know, how accurate is your measure? As in, if I give a patient the same measure twice and nothing changed in the middle, in between giving those two, I should get exactly the same score. And how likely I am to get the same score tells you something about the accuracy of the measure. So if the score just sort of fluctuates randomly, you know, then you know when you do have an interaction and when you have an intervention in the middle, you have absolutely no idea. You know, do you get a change in score because there's some fluctuation going on anyway, or is that because really something changed? So if you can change, if you can choose a measure that gives you the same result every time you run it, if nothing changed in between, that would be a real plus. The problem is that it's much easier to get that sort of test-retest reliability, which is the technical term for that sort of accuracy, for behavioral measures, and they tend to be a lot more stable than self-report measures. So that's one thing to keep in mind. The other thing to keep in mind is to sort of look at your outcome measure and think, like, how comprehensively, does it assess what it is that I want to assess? And behavior measures such as speech and noise tests are normally not very comprehensive because they only test one particular listening situation, whereas in a questionnaire you can ask about many. You also want to ask, okay, if this questionnaire, which says it's assessing satisfaction, does that give you a similar result to other questionnaires that also say that they assess satisfaction? So is there some sort of similarity between outcome measures that are saying they're measuring the same thing? And by the same sort of the complementary question then is questionnaires or outcome measures that are meant to assess something very different, do they give you a different result? So you kind of need to know for your outcome measure how accurate it is, how comprehensive and sensitive it is to exactly the particular dimension you want to assess, and how different it is to other dimensions that it is not meant to assess. So basically, like, just how specific it is. And this sort of assessment, which I think is very important for all outcome measures, hasn't really been very comprehensively done for a lot of outcome measures. So I think if you go through your outcome measures, you will find out very, very quickly that there are some that are fairly well validated and there are many that are not. And maybe if you have a lot of outcome measures to choose from anyway, you might as well choose the ones that are better validated. Because then at least you can trust the numbers.
And to do that, you have to go to the literature, I presume.
Yeah, for that, you would have to go to the literature, unfortunately. That is not particularly easily available information.
Yeah. I guess something that comes to mind, and maybe I missed whether you said it, is you talk about, so you've got to get, if no intervention happens, you want the same results both times. But presumably you also want it to be sensitive enough to small changes so that you can measure a difference.
Yes, that's right.
Which is another, I know it's a difficulty with choosing outcome measures is, you know.
Yes, that's right. Exactly. And I think that is part of, being sensitive. So only if really, really, really nothing changed, you get exactly the same result. And very little variation, you know, around that result. But as soon as something changes on a dimension that you're interested in changing, not on a dimension that's completely unrelated to what you're measuring, then you want to get a change in the score. And you can actually from that, it's quite nice from that, if you run sort of a test retest study where you measure, you know, how accurate re-measurement of the same thing is, you can actually work out what sort of change you would need in order to be, you know, to have faith in whatever change you're seeing is a real change in the underlying dimension. So you can work that out. And I think that is really, really helpful that, you know, okay, if you have a, you know, a questionnaire that goes from 0 to 50 and my patient scores 20 on it, then I do an intervention. And after the intervention, they score 25. But because I know that this is a very accurate questionnaire, and if they, you know, it measures a very sensitive and stable outcome. So if I repeatedly measure without the intervention, it would always get 20. Then 25 is a massive change, and you can believe in it that something of the underlying dimension change. Whereas if you have something that's not very accurate, where the score can vary anything between 15 and 25, then you're much less. You know, that the 25 actually means anything. So I think that is actually quite important in the outcome measure to know what the test retest reliability is to be able to work that out.
Yes, that does sound very important. And I guess from a clinical point of view, people really need to understand that difference, that critical difference.
Yes, that's right.
Before they can really interpret it. Gosh. Well, okay, so you've shared a lot. It's all pretty darn complicated. What's your key message that you'd like people to take away?
That there are lots of different outcome measures, as I'm sure all of you know. I would advocate that you think carefully about what it is that you want to measure and sort of, you know, try to answer some of the questions that we have discussed in this podcast. And basically, select a measure based on the answers to these questions rather than selecting a measure simply based on popularity or accessibility of what has been used before. I think that's the best way to move this sort of area forward in a good way.
Interesting. And do you think it's okay if everybody goes away and selects their own measure, or should there be some kind of uniformity of the measure that people use?
I think we've sort of, you know, we've touched on this before. I think there's a tension in this answer, because I think ultimately your measure needs to measure whatever you think the important outcome dimension is of your intervention. However, in order to make interventions comparable, you have to have a minimum outcome set as well. But that minimum outcome set needs to be agreed with all interested parties, and we don't have that yet. I think that is something we should strive for, and then we should have one or two measures where that we all include, regardless of whether we think this is you know, this is the right answer to our particular question, but just in order to make our study comparable to all the other studies, that's a bit of community service that we do. But then, yes, and again, you know, for clinician, and if it's not, you know, if the data never go to research or whatever, I think they should go for whatever best measures, what they want, the dimension that they want to see change on. That's what they should measure.
Great. Thank you. I think that's very useful. Do you want to add anything else just before we end? And any other things that we didn't cover?
No, I don't think so. I think that was a very brief, but hopefully fairly comprehensive overview over the different, you know, dimensions that you need to think about when choosing outcome measures. And again, as I said, I'm perfectly aware that I didn't give a whole lot of answers, but I think that is just where the field is at the moment. Yeah, and I think, you know, just to say to clinicians, you know, as long as you know why you're choosing something and you have a justification in your head, you're doing the right thing. Don't be afraid to ask these questions and to find answers for yourself.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Anja. And I think maybe what would be good if we add some references of key articles that maybe people could look up in the transcript, that might be helpful.
Yes, I will do that.
So we can do that. So I guess all that remains for me to do is say thank you, Anja, for your time and sharing your thoughts.
It's a pleasure.
It is a very important topic. To those of you listening, if you want to ask follow-up questions or give any feedback, share some ideas about future topics, you can send me an email. My email is in the transcript of this recording. It's also on the ManCAD web pages. I hope you enjoyed our discussion and you'll come back to hear our next podcast, and I'll get the word out when the next one's available. So until then, farewell and stay well.